Welcome to Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor, where conversations explore the inner frontier. What is it I can say I know and why? Who am I really? Is there such a thing as free will? How does the human mind differ from the programmed artificial intelligence being built today? How is thinking and destiny connected? Is mind really capable of being our best healer or our worst slayer? Where does the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax leave off and the mind begin? These are just some of the questions Eldon and his guest take on in this next fascinating hour. You won't want to miss any of it. And now, here's your host of Mind Matters, Eldon Taylor.
Welcome to another hour of Mind Matters, an hour devoted to questions of consciousness, mind, and all that might arise out of this inquiry and somehow, in some way, really matter. From my studio in Spokane, Washington, through the marvel of modern technology, we are coming to you wherever you might be in the world, live across the internet, and if you're in the Seattle area, on your radio's FM high-definition dial. We have an amazing guest and a truly fabulous show today. But first, I want to remind all of you that beginning September 9th, our show will air on Wednesday at 1 p.m. live, and then replay on Sundays at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Our listening audience continues to grow, thank you very much, and thus the multiple time slots. So be sure and remember on September 9th to tune in and join us on Wednesday instead of Tuesday at 1 p.m. instead of our 4 o'clock time. Now, to today's subject, life after death. If you think about the syntax of that sentence for just a moment, what is meant by life and by death? Living is not dying, or is it? Still like distant drums, our hearts are beating, funeral marches to the grave? Is that how we see life? For there to be a life after death, death must be a transition as opposed to an end. What then would one be transitioning into? Now, these are old, old questions, but in an era of science, is there a way we can evaluate these questions scientifically? Life and death are struggles that we all know in one sense or another. For Freud, we create a sort of psychic tension dealing with them. For Thomas Hobbes, the philosopher, political scientist, we're born in a world full of fear of death and dying. For Hobbes, we give away our personal power to governments so that we can protect ourselves and thereby minimize our awareness of this fear. Further, according to Hobbes, when we seek power over others, it is because of our fear and our need to subordinate our constant feelings of fear in some way that we do this. The fear of death is the final nothing. Everything lost, for most. The fear of dying is the pain, the suffering, the loss endured. The fear of life is the inevitability of dying and the finality of death. Should it be? Is it really this for most? Our academic world today finds little room for things like spirit, angels, afterlife, and so forth. Why is that? Has science hardened its eggshell so much in favor of secularism that it is incapable of entertaining alternatives? We are all aware of the split between much of science and religion or spirituality, but there is also a very real bifurcation within the ranks of science on this issue of religiosity and or spirituality. Thus the question, is there a way to honestly investigate the afterlife? Can we bring a measure of science to this inquiry? Can we at least obtain a courtroom level of certainty? I mean, we put people to death over a courtroom level of certainty. We take their fortunes. That is, can we secure enough information as to be able to state our opinion with a reasonable certainty, the preponderance of evidence, the test of a civil court, or still better, beyond a reasonable doubt, the test of a criminal court? I know what I think. What do you think? We want your ideas, thoughts, and questions, so join us. You can do that by phoning toll-free, 877-230-3062, or by entering our chat room. Just go to www.ctrchat.com from anywhere in the world and enter your comments and questions. As usual, my partner Ravinder is here in the studio with me. Say hello to everyone out there, Ravinder.
Hello, everyone out there, Ravinder.
Week in, week out, I get the same line. She monitors the chat room, watching it live during the broadcast. She will greet you and see that I don't get too involved with our guests, so your questions and comments will get on the air. Meet her in the chat room. Also in the studio with me today is a visitor from Cambridge University, my niece, Sheena Nandrin. Sheena is working on her PhD, and she joins us just in case we need a physicist to help us keep everything scientifically correct. Say hello to everybody, Sheena.
Hi, I'm looking forward to today's discussion.
Great. You should take from Sheena there, Ravinder. That's a little more original.
I varied my lines.
Now, my special guest today is Dr. John Lerma, the best-selling author of Into the Light. Dr. Lerma is a renowned physician who has spent his career documenting the near-death and pre-death experiences of his terminally ill patients. His new book, Learning from the Light, follows his first bestseller, Into the Light. Learning from the Light, Pre-Death Experiences, Prophecies, and Angelic Messages of Hope is an absolutely inspirational read. In electrifying scenes of encounters with angels, miraculous healings, prophecies, and visions, Dr. Lerma reveals compelling research and evidence that a loving spiritual world awaits human beings. Welcome to Mind Matters, Dr. Lerma.
Thank you, Alden. It's great to be on the show, and I really look forward to this incredible topic.
Well, I have to tell you from the get-go, I am a great admirer of your work. I had the personal opportunity, if you will, pleasure, privilege, indeed, to meet and share with some of your friends at a filming in Burbank this last weekend. And I can't tell you any more than they all hold you in such high regard. And after reviewing your material, they should. You're a hospice physician, and that's got to be really, you know, that is a difficult road to go down. I think we should probably open this up with why did you choose that part of medicine? Did it somehow, some way lead you to the work that you're doing today?
Absolutely. I believe quite a little different than most doctors. it didn't start late for me. It started very early in my life. A connection with our spirituality, death and dying, and through family members and so forth. And I was raised Buddhist and Catholic, so I call myself a Buddhacast. There's no churches around like that, but it's a great inspiration to me to be able to have the philosophy for my mother's Buddhist ways and the basic premise of Christianity. And having all of that and said all of that, I've always been intrigued by the unknown, especially afterlife, just like most beings. And that's what weds all religions, Eldon. You know, it's the fear of death, bottom line. That's what religion exists for. It's to explain that we're going to go somewhere else, that try not to be fearful of death and dying. And we are the only species that have that conscious awareness. And so that's where it really leads. And I think most people, even though they deny it, most of my colleagues and in medicine and in pharmacy, I have a physics background as well. When we all really sit and have a beer, much like the president's going to do tomorrow, we end up talking about the fact that there is probably some intelligence out there, and they really, really want to know about it. But the secular side of who runs all of these, what we do in medicine, they don't want that to come out. They don't want us to look into that. They think it's too it's too esoteric, it's too out there, that somehow it's going to shun people away from trusting medicine or trusting science. You know, much like people distrust your astrologers and mediums, they think they're going to be in that same kind of avenue. And really, the reality is that it's not. And so, you know, heading into medicine and early on, seeing I was around the period of time where the advent of AIDS really was hitting hard in the 80s. You know, just people were just dying left and right, and they had not taught us about death and dying in med school, what to do, how to comfort these patients other than just physical. They didn't talk about the mind, body, spirit. You've got to talk to them, sit with them, hold their hand. And that's where I got to really bifurcate, as you say, from traditional medicine. And that was to start to think, start to view a difference in the way we should be viewing our patients. And that is human beings, people that feel and that think and that hurt, and to address all those issues. And so I started doing that on myself, by myself, and then realized that there was a few other doctors around the States you know, across the pond there in England, where a lot of this started, and slowly it started building up, and now it's I guess over the last 3 years has become a formalized specialty. The American Board of Medical Specialties has finally agreed that this is needed, and of course that came from a push from the government and to save money, because getting people into hospice talking about death and dying does save money in the end. But more importantly than that, it's just it's the baby boomers. The baby boomers are very educated. They want to know that there's a choice. They want to know that, hey, is there an afterlife? What's going on? We've heard these stories from some doctors, but not all doctors. How does the American Board of Medical Specialties view this as a whole? And so they came up with a specialty, and as a result of that, now we have a leg to stand on. Now we can get some funding to research this. And so, you know, we got several doctors, Bruce Grayson from Virginia Medical School, who's studying this, you know, Peter Fenwick, a neuropsychiatrist, a neurosurgeon, Jack Turner in Hawaii, myself, and a host of other doctors that are really, we're all getting together and putting our research together. And you know, as we go on through on this this topic, we can talk about that research and what we found and where it's leading. But the bottom line is that we really are starting to find out that there is a pattern, a consistent pattern, as any scientist will tell you. Anything that's consistent through an observation and persistently the same, basically, it's worth looking into. And medicine had not looked into all of these visions or these experiences people were discussing days before their death. They just basically would put them into the wastebasket of hallucinations, the diagnosis of hallucinations. And in reality, it's not a hallucination. It's not a confused period. These people are very lucid, very aware, very, you know, they're reasoning beyond basic reason, but incredible reasoning. And that's where the excitement is now, and some of the research is going, and the next few years, just wait, you know, we're going to be hooking up with, you know, the physicists, the quantum physicists are basically the ones really starting a lot of this. And I'm really excited about it, Elton.
Well, it is a subject that we should all be looking at day one, almost. I mean, it is, for all intent and purposes, something that faces all of us. We live at a time, as you've already pointed out, where the political, the economic, they are forced themselves on us in our culture in this day and age in ways that it behooves all of us to become aware of the economics. Now, you mentioned that, and it's my understanding that 36% lower health costs were achieved where patients were actually given an opportunity to converse with their physician about end of life.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, the economic side, but then, you know, I think the fear that most people have in everything in life is the unknown. And so when you find these patterns, what is it that you're finding in the patterns that might tell us, that might lift the veil so it's not so unknown?
Oh my gosh. I probably interviewed people, number-wise, probably somewhere over 30,000 now over the last 15 years. And, probably somewhere from 3 days, one to 3 days to about 4 to 6 months prior to their death. And from all walks of life, all religions, working in Houston at the Med Center there, people from all over the world come there. It's one of the two well-known cancer research centers in the world, and that's Sloan Kettering and MD Anderson. And so, of course, you're going to get people from all over the place coming there to search for that magic bullet, if you will, the healing potion, which they never find for the most part, and they always end up in a palliative setting or in a hospice setting, and that's where I come in. And so, it's not uncommon to have, your Muslims and, the Islamic faith, Christian faith, Buddhist faith, kings, queens from the Middle East, and down to your rank and file, to your murderers, to your atheists, agnostics, just name it. And that's at that point, after the first 100 to 500 patients I interviewed, I realized that all of these varying degrees and they transcended all of these specificities amongst people and cultures. They were all talking the same thing, saying the same thing. And that was that, hey, I'm seeing my deceased loved one. My mom, my dad, or a child I lost is standing right next to you, Dr. Lama. It's standing to the corner. I'm seeing this light being, a radiant light being at the door to my hospital room. It's talking to me in my mind and asking me if it can come in, he or she can come in and review my life. They want to help me transition to the next realm, and that they are there just for that, to comfort, to guide, to love, and to help people find self-forgiveness and self-love. It's never anything different than that, Eldon. What I'm trying to get at is what I just described is what most people are saying. Probably 90% of the 30-some thousand that I interviewed were saying the basic same thing. Corner, they appear in the corner, the light beings in the, at the doorway, asking to come in to help review their lives. These people have all of their faculties intact. They're talking just like you and I are talking now, very clear. They know exactly what's going on, and they actually at times will even have a precognition as to the day of their death, and actually sometimes almost to the second.
All right,
and,
hold that
that's
thought.
That's pretty incredible.
Hold that thought. We have to take a break.
Yeah. It's really incredible, and that's what's going on. And so we're looking, what we're doing now is by seeing all of that, the continued compilation of these familiar and similar events and phenomena, we're coming up with theories. We're going, well, okay, so how do we look into this? How do we
all right, now, Dr. Lerner, hold that thought.
I'm sorry,
right
I'm
where
sorry.
You are.
Go ahead. Yeah.
We have to take a break, so let's get
okay,
that
I'm
behind
sorry.
Us, and then when we come back, let's pick it up right there, okay?
Okay. Excellent.
You're listening to Mind Matters on Contact Talk Radio. My special guest today is Dr. John Lerner. We're talking about his book, Learning from the Light. We're really talking about the afterlife. I encourage you take a look at his website. It's www.drjohnlerma.com. We'll be right back after these commercial messages.
My special arrangement, Eldon has made available his best-selling Essential Pillars of Success at unheard-of savings. The principles in Essential Pillars have worked for thousands of people around the world and are guaranteed to work for you. Essential Pillars of Success consists of nine programs on eight CDs and comes with a book that explains how and why it's so easy to self-sabotage our best efforts and provides a roadmap for correcting those thought patterns and beliefs. It also includes a booklet teaching the learning strategies involved in choosing the programs or scripts that run through your mind. The entire mind conditioning set normally sells for $243.50, but is yours today for only $88. Plus, you will receive hundreds of dollars in bonus tools to further assist you. Call 1-800-964-3551 today for details.
You've heard of subliminal messages as used to sell you goods, ideas, even politicians. But did you know there is a patented and scientifically demonstrated effective CD series known as InnerTalk? InnerTalk can motivate and teach your subconscious in ways that can release stress, restore confidence, and build a new you. Millions of users worldwide have turned to InnerTalk as the antidote for all the negative messaging that most of us get every day. Think about it. Play your CD in the background while you do other things, and all the while your subconscious mind is being trained. Maybe you want to lose weight, or maybe you have difficulty in your relationships, or maybe you think of the maybe and ask yourself, what could I do if I believe that I could do anything and not fail? Go to their website and get their free catalog today at innertalk.com or call toll free 1-800-964-3551. Remember, InnerTalk, when believing in yourself matters.
Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor is brought to you in part by the Mind Mint, the self-improvement superstore. MindMint.com offers hundreds of books, audio and video programs, subliminal and hypnosis technologies, software, biofeedback, and much more, all designed with your success in mind. Proven programs to help in almost all situations and walks of life, from the practical to the spiritual. Go to www.mindmint.com, your complete one-stop self-improvement superstore. Once again, that's www.mindmint.com.
Welcome back. My special guest today, Dr. John Lerman, and I were talking during the break, and he told me something that's really amazing. We were discussing, just as we went to break, patterns that that he has seen in 30,000 patients, or at 90% of those 30,000 patients, and those patterns included seeing deceased loved ones, having light beings, offering light reviews. But during the break, he told me that he actually has photographs of light leaving the body just at passing. Pick that up, will you, Dr. Lerma, and
sure.
Tell the entire audience about it.
Sure, absolutely. We were actually, thanks for bringing that up and reminding me about that. We'll also talk about the quarter, but basically about physical evidence. That's always the smoking gun. And what I did decide to do, and part of that was to, I've been watching all of these ghost hunter shows and how they use their digital cameras and they pick up on stuff. And I said, well, maybe digital cameras will pick up on stuff, or infrared cameras and so forth. But so I just started off with a basic camera, and I take pictures of people through the consent of families right as they're passing, or seconds after they pass. And maybe about 30 or 40 pictures that I've taken, a good probably 10%, 20% of them were pretty clear enough to be able to say that there was this massive, really massive white light. It shrouded the person's chest wall cavity and stomach area, sort of around your solar plexus, where most of my patients say that's where they say that that's where they feel the telepathy comes through, the discussion, not really through their skull, but through their abdomen, that feeling that we all have when something's bad or good. And that's where this light is coming in. It's the same color each time. It's as white as snow, and it's probably as white as what people say the tunnel looks like. And wow. I just got to say, you know, as far, you know, from physics and, you know, our science background, you know, Einstein said energy is neither created or destroyed. It changes form. And so it's really interesting to watch the actual dying process. You know, you, one moment this person is talking to you, you know, with all of their emotions and love for life and their family, and then the next moment the body's just white, it's gone. And you know, it's like going, how can that just go away? And it's just something in me, and that's when I say, I gotta take a picture. Let's see if I can pick some energy up. And sure enough, you know, we got those pictures, and I'm trying to get the family to sign them over, Eldon, and get them on the website. What I'll have to do is probably probably blank out the face of the person, because these people are actually deceased, and trying to do this with you know, honoring the patient,
sure,
you know, and making sure that that HIPAA regulations are, you know, are all being watched closely. You know how that is here in the United
absolutely.
States.
Absolutely.
I'm almost there. I'm getting it together, and but I tell you what, it is incredible, Eldon. It really has really built up my faith even more, watching this, and also just talking to these people and the prophecies they give, and the you know, the precognitive information they give. And then also, you know, we can talk about some of the studies we're doing with
sure.
the brain.
And I want to know more about what to expect on the other side. And I'm sure our listening audience has lots and lots of questions. But we have someone you and I both think very, very highly on the phone right now, calling
yes.
in with a question about out-of-body. Dr. John L. Turner, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. And I wonder if Martin's here with us, too. That static was strange. Eldon, hello, Johnny. Hi, Eldon.
Hey, how are you, Jack?
Listen, it's my pleasure to speak with both of you on the phone line like this, and soon we'll be together doing this. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, which side are we going to be together doing this? On the other side or on this side?
Either way, and both ways. But let me tell you what.
That's what Martin's waiting for.
That's a good political answer.
Listen, Johnny, I called in because I wanted Eldon to have you repeat that story about the man with the cardiac arrest in the trauma room.
Yes.
Who eventually got PTA or something, but he called you over when you reached intensive care and wanted to tell you the story about what he experienced on top of the monitor. I really wanted to be sure you could tell that one, because of
sure.
all these experiments with out of the body where they're putting cards up high, and I've never seen any results, but when I heard you speak about that, I said, now, if this is not proof, what is proof? Could you talk about that one, Johnny?
Yeah, that's, you know, in the first book, I think it's in the intro that I discussed that story, and that one occurred early on in my career as an intern, and in the ER, I was doing the ER elective, and of course, like most ERs, there's a certain number of trauma rooms. This is a basic, a major trauma center. And just like, I always tend to carry what we call a black cloud, and that means that you get really busy, and that day was no different than any other day I'd worked there. And sure enough, we got, there was major accidents or a couple of accidents, and brought in, there was several fatalities, and they brought in some that were near death, and of course, a few doctors there, and you know, we're there, and so everybody had to go into their own separate room. I was an intern, and of course they triage everything, and of course the ones with the greatest chance of survival, of course they got the best care. The ones with the least chance of survival, probably maybe going into hospice, they put them down at a lower level, yet they still get care. And of course, I was the one caring for this one person in particular, an elderly gentleman who had been an alcoholic all his life and very abusive to his family. I found all this out after the fact, and all of this plays into what he tells me and why, after having his near death, why he came back. It was to reconcile this part of himself, and not so much with the people, his wife and so forth, as much as it was for himself. He needed to love himself and forgive himself. And that just seems to be, just real quick, that seems to be the persistent message I hear from all my patients, is self-love, self-forgiveness is the key to a peaceful journey. And we're never going to attain that if we continue along the ways we're going in Western civilization. But to get back into the story, so this gentleman comes in and he's having a massive heart attack. And he's still awake somewhat, and I'm talking to him, and we hook him up to the monitor. The monitor's about 8 or 9 feet up, like in the trauma center deck. And so we're looking at it, and he's going in through, he has some arrhythmias going on, and then eventually just goes, he flatlines, and then he goes into an arrhythmic stage, into what we call ventricular fibrillation. And so we have to shock him. And so I get it together. I shock him, and each time that I shocked him, he'd come back out of it almost like I thought it was that he was pain. He was in pain at the moment, he was sighing a real deep sigh, and I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry." Because of course the joules that's going through the body, 300 joules, that's a lot. And so I say, "Man, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry you're hurting." And he goes, "No, I'm not hurting." He goes, "I'm coming. It's like a roller coaster," is what he's saying. And then he'd go back out. Eventually, he was awake long enough to discuss part of that, and that was that he was out of his body. Each time he'd go out, and he saw me looking at the monitor, and he saw us shocking him, and he'd go right back into his body, and then go right back out each time he died. And while he was out, he's telling me this later, but I'll get to that. But he eventually we stabilize him long enough, get him in, and they go ahead and send him in and do a heart cath and open up his arteries. So the next day, like I do with all my patients, we have our visits, our daily visits with them. And I go into the ICU first, and there's this guy just waving me down. I'm thinking, "Oh my God, who is that?" And it was the gentleman that wasn't supposed to survive, much older. And I said, "Oh my God, there's no way this guy can be awake and talking like this." But sure enough, it was him. He really needed to talk to me. He goes, "You were there. I was telling you some stuff." He goes, "I need you to find something out for me. I had an out-of-body experience, and I need to know that it's for real." And I go, "Well, how can I do that?" And he goes, "Well, while I was out of my body, I knew I was out of my body. I was aware of it. I was aware that I was dead. My body was dead. And there were beings there, but mainly it was more of a conversation, telepathic conversation going on. But for a big part of the moment that he was out of his body, which, by the way, he says it's timeless. Even though it might have been only seconds to a few minutes, for him it was timeless. It's out of the space-time geometry of sorts. And but he says, "I'm out of my body. I know I'm going to go back in." He was negotiating with the higher beings and God to come back to have another chance to get it right, to forgive himself. And he says, "I need to know that this is for real." So he looked around for something that I would not know, or any of the other people that maybe he might have spoken to and asked to look for this, to look for something. And so, sure enough, there's a quarter. He saw that. How weird is that? There's a quarter, he says, on the monitor, on top of the monitor, which is about 9 feet high, and it's on the right lower-hand corner. He gets close to it. He can't see his body. He says it's just visualizing everything. He can actually see, and in fact, his vision was perfect, he said. And he looks at the quarter, gets down close to it, right lower hand, there's dust, a light film of dust over at the top of it, and it's 1985. And with that, he goes right back into his body. We push him off. You know, he goes into the hard cast, and here he is. He's telling me the story, and he goes, could you please go look? I need to know. Well, of course I'm going to go look.
Sure.
I mean, oh, my God, if that is true, you know, it's incredible. You know, it's far-reaching, the implications. And so I go out there. I tell the nurses about it. We had heard these stories off and on, as most doctors that work in the ER. We hear them, but no one can ever prove it. And here's this guy finally that says, I can prove it. There's a quarter up there. And so we're looking up at the monitors. Let's go get a ladder. We get a ladder. It's in the the trauma room. People are just wondering, what the hell are we doing? And he goes, well, you'll see. So sure enough, I get up there, and oh, my God, there it was. The quarter, right lower-hand corner, 1985, just like you said it. Light film of death over the top of it. No fingerprints, as like someone had placed it there after the fact. The trauma center had just been renovated, and that trauma room, along with a few others, were new, probably a year, year and a half old. And so it probably was just somebody that, when he put the monitor up there, left the quarter up there and had been there for about a year and a half. And this man never worked, especially in that line of field, or even in the hospital setting. And so, you know, the scientist in me said, well, maybe this guy did this. Well, come on. I started telling myself, come on. How would this guy know, first of all, he's going to have a heart attack, go to that hospital, and then be in that certain trauma room? You know,
no,
of course
that's
not.
That's an absolutely incredible story. And,
yeah, and so I go back and tell him, and he's just like, thank you, and he starts crying. And that's when he starts to tell me some of what he saw and the importance of forgiveness and love.
All right, you hold that thought. We want to know what he saw. When we come back, we have one more break. You're listening to Mind Matters. My guest today is Dr. John Lerma. We're talking about the afterlife. We're talking about his marvelous book, Learning from the Light. Boy, and I can't tell you, I can't recommend this book too much. You definitely want to get a copy of it. It is a most inspirational book. All right, we'll be right back after these commercial messages.
Life? Waking up tired? Unable to focus? At last, a new approach for the treatment of stress-related disorders. It's called CES, a revolutionary new technology that is safe, effective, and easy to use. Best of all, it has none of the negative side effects of drugs. CES has been validated by a major study at the Harvard School of Public Health. Its benefits demonstrated in dozens of independent research studies conducted at the National Institute of Health. And this new technology is now available in CES Ultra, the most effective and cost-effective unit now on the market. So why endure another stress-filled day? Increase your mental energy. Elevate your mood. CES Ultra can make the difference. It is available on a 30-day, no-questions-asked, money-back guarantee. Call 866-YES for CES or go to CESUltra.com to find out more about this breakthrough technology. CES Ultra, the doorway to good health and a balanced life.
Hay House, the publisher that has revolutionized the industry, brings you Choices and Illusions, the riveting New York Times bestseller by Eldon Taylor. How did I get where I am and how do I get where I want to be? Questions we all ask ourselves. Choices and Illusions brings you the answers. Learn how choices are made for you without your knowledge, how you are programmed to sabotage your own goals, and why success so often eludes you. Learn to rewrite the most powerful influence in your life, your subconscious mind. John Edward, host of the Crossing Over Show, says, read this book. We are living at a time when people are searching for answers in their lives. This book can be, if applied, a roadmap to personal enlightenment and empowerment. I believe it can tune in the frequency you are currently operating on. More importantly, it helps you to see that you can manifest a change. Get your copy today. Buy it online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or get it at your local bookstore.
Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor is brought to you in part by InnerTalk, the patent and proven audio technology that makes change easy from the inside out. When you're ready for change, you want InnerTalk. You can succeed and you can begin today. Lose weight. Stop smoking. Enhance relationships. Be a better parent. Increase memory. End procrastination. Realize your goals and so much more. Hundreds of titles to choose from. Inner Talk. When believing in yourself matters. Check it out today at www.innertalk.com or phone for a free catalog at 1-800-964-3551. Again, for more information and that free catalog, call them at 1-800-964-3551.
You're listening to Mind Matters, and welcome back. If you just joined us, my guest today is Dr. John Lerma. Dr. Lerma is enlightening us with stories from the other side. Dr. Lerma's wonderful book, Learning from the Light, I can't recommend too highly. So once again, I'll tell you, you know, go out there and get this book. You can get it everywhere, can't you, Dr. Lerma?
Yes, I'm pretty sure. And if not, the easiest way is just going through Amazon.com on the Internet. Yeah.
Okay. Just before we went to break, you were telling us about the quarter, 1985, a cardiac care patient. And you said, if I recall correctly, that he came to tears when you informed him that indeed there was that quarter. And then he began to tell you what he saw. Please share that with us.
Absolutely. And, you know, first of all, just want to let everybody know, this occurred early on in my career before I even began to even think about doing research in any of this. So, you know, I wish I would have probably, you know, hindsight where I'm at now, I wish I would have been then, because I would have asked him a lot more questions. But what I did get out of him...
But he probably spurred you toward the career. If these kinds of things didn't happen, you might have fallen into that rut of secularism and missed all of this for all of us.
Absolutely. That's the one commonality of many of the quotes people or comments people have before their passing, and that is that there are incidences that are in life that are God, that they call them God incidences instead of coincidences. Everything is dictated, if we look at it and look deep in our heart, to guide us into a life of where we're going to meet our destiny, and we're creating our destiny. And I think that this man certainly was a big impetus for that for me. And I look at that now, and sure enough, I mean, oh my gosh, probably the only guy out there as of date that has given me proof of the afterlife. And I think and I think since then it's just like I'm going, okay, I'm looking for that other quarter, you know. But you know, things just you know, God works in mysterious ways, and you know, we're working towards that. But you know, he did tell me what he did say, Eldon, was very beautiful. He did see God, he said. He heard them first. There was a light, or actually like a, he described it at the corner of the room, of course, and of course this later on was another commonality. For some reason, things are always occurring in the corner of the room, never directly right in front of them. Well, with the exception, when they do see God, it's right in front of them, but it's more often than not, it's in the corners, the light, the tunnel, the people, the angels, everything are in the corners. And I'm still trying to figure that one out. But
you don't suspect that that
you know,
has anything
he said that
to
the
do
light
with...
came out, the voices came, and then this cloud, a light, that a cloud of little particles. And of course, I say, are there photons? You know, and he goes, I don't know what that is. He goes, like little light bulbs, and he goes, something like that. He goes, just millions and millions of them, and bright, 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 white, but just like everyone else says, it's not bright enough to to, you know, to hurt your head or, you know, and to make you feel uneasy. And he says, in fact, it's very, very loving. The brighter it is, the more calming it is. And in fact, it seems to be playing on your emotions. So the more he felt love for himself or just love in general, the brighter the light got, he said. And the clearer the sounds and the voices of entities, which later he said he knew who they were, and a couple of them were his mom and dad. The other one was God, and a lady's voice, which he was Catholic. He said he thought it was Mary, and they're just he said the most incredible thing was that they didn't judge him, and he felt that he was going to be judged. He says the thing that happens, John, he goes, and or Dr. Lerman, he goes, is that when you're out of your body, he goes, now that I know the quarters there, let me tell you what I felt. He goes, you carry your memories with you, everything that you're feeling, everything that you've acquired in life, that you learned in life, good and or bad. And the thing is, you come to a realization that, oh my God, you think this is what's going to happen. You think you're going to be judged because you start to convict yourself for it. You know, now it's like going, oh my God, this is true. This is actually happening. You know, the end of my life is here. And all of this stuff we've heard about in religion and in church and on radio and TV, it's actually happening. And oh my God, I'm going to go to hell. Especially me. I abused my family. I was an alcoholic, and he did much worse things than that, actually. But here comes these voices. Not once did they mention the things he had done. And that's what I hear over and over, Eldon. And in fact, they were just talking to him and saying, hey, we love you. And there was no discord in their voices, sound of discord or anger or judgment. It was very non-judgmental, non-condemning, very compassionate, just like, hey, it's just like, hey, we love you. You're a son. You're a child. You're coming back home. You know what? You were down there and experiencing this journey. You're back home, and that's what it was like. It was going on vacation, he said, and then they're opening the doors back up to you, and then you're going to tell them what you learned. But he goes, the biggest thing was that he could not forgive himself, and his conviction was so hard that even though he felt that these people were all loving, he thought that maybe they were just luring him that way. They were maybe just manipulating him. And then once they lured him into that light, that they would judge him. And so he said, I started to negotiate. He said that in Spanish. He was a Spanish man. And negotiate to come back, and I needed to redo it, and, you know, and of course they go, why do you want to do that? They asked him, and he goes, well, because I need to forgive myself. I need to learn to do that. I need to make sure that my wife and my children are okay. I don't want to leave them feeling horrible about this stuff, you know, and about my death and what I did for them. I want to give closure. And at that moment, the voices, well, now, he said they turn into these entities, these bright entities, that you could see their face. It was transparent in the woman, and there were, you know, the man was wearing this white to maroon robe. The woman was wearing this blue kind of dress. Very, very beautiful beings, he said, just piercing these eyes that they weren't necessarily like colored eyes, but he said there was a light coming from it, and he could just purely piercing his soul with love. And they just said, okay, you know, if you're going down there to make sure that you're going to understand what love is and self-love, then that's fine. You know, it's because you have free will even on this side. And so he went back in, and you know, I followed him that whole year. He died a year later. And by the end of that year, he had fix things as much as any human can, and his family was just so ecstatic about it. He told them about their experience. You know, of course, it came out in the book that, you know, honoring him and the message that God had given him and what he had done. And now his family goes around churches and they talk about this. And people are coming to believe, you know, in their way through this incident or through this.
And uplifted by it,
experience.
I'm sure, you know.
It's very uplifting. That story really set the tone for all the other ones, because what he was telling me was pretty much what everyone else is telling me. And that's when I start saying, oh my God, this is the same kind of message I heard from the guy with the porter. And then the first 1,000, then the 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 patients. I'm going, I need to write something about this. You know? And that was the impetus. And you're right, this man really and God led me into this path.
It's a marvelous story, and you know, that's even more pressing in times like we live in today. This message, self-love, self-forgiveness, you know, that's anything but the enmity and the avariciousness and other that we see so rampant in the world. We haven't got a lot of time, but how would you like to leave your message in the minds of our listener? You know, we're not all going to pass tomorrow. We're not all going be in a hospice. Go ahead.
You know what, Eldon? I'm no different than he was. I'm not going to judge him. You know, granted, I've done what he's done. But I do have some fear sometimes. And what I want to tell people is that's normal. The fear is what I've come to realize. It's just an involuntary mechanism that's placed in our body. To self-preserve, to continue our life here on planet Earth, to continue procreating. But we also have our higher self that's divided from our ego to be able to observe and to acknowledge this fact, and to come, which is the hard part, Eldon. That is coming down to the realization that saying, hey, you know what? The ego and the body are doing their thing. It might not be good, but my spirit has come into the body, and that's what people are saying. The spirit comes into the body that's already genetically defined to do certain things. And it's the spirit that is observing this and hopefully can maybe make some changes and leave this world a better place. But in the end, it's about understanding that, hey, I learned some things, whether good or bad, it was knowledge. And this knowledge brings about the truth. And that is finally understanding that whether you were an abuser or not, or did some incredible things in life to help famine and the drought, that in the end, if you really look at yourself for who you are, that's the truth. And that's what we're seeking. And secular society and who we are in this world, we do everything but look at who we are. And that's what is happening at the end of life, Eldon, is we're having to view ourselves for the first time who we are, the truth, and that God loves us exactly that way. And once we find that truth, then we will realize that we are co-creators with God, and that we can move from that avenue to a further avenue, because we're eternal beings.
You know, there's a marvelous metaphor that I like there, Dr. Lerma. It goes like this, you know, if your tie's crooked,
yes,
you don't reach into the mirror to fix it. You reach to the tie, right back on yourself. And so much of what we see that's wrong in the world isn't really wrong in the world. It's wrong in our perception. It's wrong in the way we hold it. And I'll put wrong in quotation marks.
I love that.
But you know, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show. We have about 60 seconds. What can you, how can our listening audience get a hold of you? Tell us your website, anything else?
Sure. Eldon, I answer all my emails. It might take a few days, but anyone has any questions from just some of the research I'm doing to actually just questions about hospice or any family members that may be ill, and what to do, I'm there. This is my passion, my calling, and if I can do just anything for anyone, small or large, it doesn't matter. That is what I'm to give to this world, and hopefully I can make this world better than when I found it.
Well, folks, you heard that. This is the real deal, Dr. John Lerma. And, I mean, he is the real deal. Yeah, so, you know, Gettysburg, Learning from the Light. Dr. Lerma, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank
now, we're
you.
Coming to the end of another hour. I want to thank all of you out there for being with us today and hope you join us again next week for another hour of Mind Matters. Well, my guest will be Dr. Leo Kim. We'll be discussing his book, Healing the Rift, which argues that the conflicts between science and spirituality can be resolved with recent scientific discoveries. This promises to be of great interest, and we'll get Dr. Kim's take on the spirit world during our interview. So until next week, make every moment of every day a truly great one. Appreciate yourself. As Dr. Lerner has shown us, love yourself, forgive yourself, and as Shakespeare stated in his play Hamlet, above all else, to thine own self be true. Good afternoon.
Thank you for listening to Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor, the one show where your mind is the ultimate frontier. Remember to join him again for more riveting guests and thought-provoking discussions every Tuesday at 4 o'clock Pacific Time right here on ContactTalkRadio.com.